It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure to check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You could email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And all the podcasts of the shows can be found there. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. This show is a great show. We're going to be talking with Jen Hewlin, the owner of Water's Edge Winery, one of my valued partners, here in the first segment. And then segments 2, 3, and 4, Ben Martin, who is a patriotic historian and a former Army Ranger. We're going through some of the important documents and speeches of America's founding. So today we'll talk about the Constitution. And this show is brought to you by the Harris family, another value partner. And thank you to them for sponsoring this show. As we look at these issues, it's important for us to start to use critical thinking. What, why, when, how, where, and who? And if we start to ask those questions, it starts to shed light on what is happening out there. So be sure and teach your kids also about critical thinking. As we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom, or freedom versus fear, fear versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force, and it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, their livelihood, their speech, their right of assembly via force. And Steve, producer Steve, we saw that this weekend, that there were those that were taking away the right to assemble, the right of free speech down in downtown Denver at the Back the Blue rally.
You know, I went looking yesterday for coverage of that event, and either Michelle Malkin's video that she took personally or the from KDVR, Fox 31, their coverage, and all I can think of is we need to start referring to that area between 14th and Colfax, Lincoln and Broadway as the black hole, because nothing good is coming out of that area.
Well, and a coverage of the event was very limited. I talked to a couple of people that normally are on it regarding news, and they're like, no, we didn't hear about that. But Greg Lopez is doing Monday afternoon press conferences. He is a former mayor of Parker. He was with the Small Business Administration, and he's a candidate for governor. And if you go to his Facebook page, Greg Lopez, he actually addresses some of these issues, as well as he has pictures of the Capitol and also what is happening down there. It is absolutely astonishing. It looks terrible, Steve.
Well, the graffiti all over the building itself, or actually a couple different buildings, I guess. And now we're seeing a story in Patty's package this morning about, okay, we're going to attempt to try to clean this up. Well, initial predictions are, well, $1 million. And that's just the starting point.
People that destroyed that should have to pay for that.
Well, but who destroyed it? I mean, we're standing back and we're basically watching it happen. Who is being arrested for the things that they're doing to the building, to the property, to the monuments and whatnot? Yeah, I agree. Charge them. Let's take them to court. But it's not happening.
No, and apparently the police stood down while all this was going on. I saw a picture. A guy apparently got hit over the head with a skateboard and had to, very bloody, and had to go to the emergency room. This is not okay. And this is not okay to be happening here in Denver, Colorado. And the responsibility of the governor and the mayor is that they are to keep people safe. They're to keep the people's house safe. Greg had an interesting thought. It's like, if they can't take care of the people's house, maybe we need to move the location of the Capitol, Steve.
Well, I heard that, and I think both of those men, the governor and the mayor, they're talking tough, but the difference between words and actions is it's incredibly visible.
Yeah, and it's really sad what is happening there. But people need to be able to assemble peaceably as well as be able to hear their voices heard. And sadly,
that brings up another very valid point in terms of that group who had a permit to be there for the sixth or seventh year that they've done this thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And here they are. They're getting ready to start in terms of watching KDVR's coverage. The speaker came up to the podium, and within seconds of him starting the event, here come the opposition. And their motive was only to disrupt and keep this event from happening, keeping anybody's words from being heard. In other words, let me shut down your freedom of speech.
And our elected representatives are put there to make sure that that we're safe and that we have these rights. Those things that are in the Bill of Rights are so important. And we're seeing the governor and the mayor just turn a blind eye on that. Go ahead.
But not just here. There are other cities where going down as well. And let's get down to the, brass tacks here. They're blue cities. They're blue states.
Yeah. And elections have consequences.
Yes, they do.
And we need to remember that as we're coming into this next election cycle. As Reagan said, this is a time for choosing. And which way do you want to go? Do you want to go towards anarchy? Or do you want to go towards the American idea where people have freedom and they're able to go after their pursue their happiness, and they have life, liberty? There was actually, life was, accosted on Sunday down at the Capitol, and liberty as well. And so the veil is off, though. We're seeing clarity to this. And if people are going to vote for that, I can't believe that they would. I think it's a very small, very vocal minority. But let's jump over here to our quote, because we're going to be talking about the Constitution and three of the main characters or main figures in the drafting of the Constitution. George Washington was one of them. And Washington was an American political leader, military general, statesman, and founding father who served as the first president of the United States from 1789 to 1797. Previously, he had led Patriot forces to victory in the nation's war for independence. He presided at the Constitutional Convention of 1787, which established the U.S. Constitution and a federal government. Washington has been called the father of his country for his manifold leadership in the formative days of the new nation. He was born in 1732 and he died in 1799 at the age of 67. And this is what he said, Steve. He said, "The foundation of a great empire is laid, and I please myself with a persuasion that Providence will not leave its work imperfect." Didn't they just, beautiful words, Steve? I bet he's getting Jen on the line right now. While we're waiting to do that, I want to say thank you to this great team that we have, Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for all your support and your good work. And thank you to each of you listeners. You each are valued and treasured. And today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. I'm going to go on over to another headline here that I think is pretty important. Patty found this. This is from whiskeyriff.com. It says, people and businesses are getting creative during the pandemic. A recent upload to Reddit showing a restaurant's Here for Beer menu has gone viral for its workaround during COVID-19. According to the uploader, the name of this is Test Bus 67. The restaurant, which he left nameless, is located in Pennsylvania. Given the local restrictions, the restaurant is only allowed to serve beer if someone orders food. So the owners of the establishment literally serve one cheese puff ball for 5 cents. This then accounts for a food order, and the customer can then order a beer. You can get a deep fried pickle for $1, an onion ring for 50 cents, and the fries for $1. So, that's the great thing, is people are very creative, and they're working around that. Let's see.
You stole my thunder in terms of the creativity of this.
You love it. You love it. And, I think a bigger example on this, Steve, is I was listening to one of the commentators yesterday about, wealth taxes, how the left is moving over to people have to pay their fair share. Well, you know, and there, you know, more and more taxes on wealthy people. But people get creative. Somebody said that when Bill Clinton put in place that any corporation that paid their CEO $1 million or more would have to pay more in taxes, the stock option program was born. So people are very creative, and you put roadblocks up and they will figure it out, Steve.
Yeah, and it's funny that it's something that we have to do, is to come up with creative ways to thwart our government in terms of them picking our pockets.
Yes. One other thing I wanted to mention, this is pretty, well, a couple of things. NBA owner Mark Cuban refuses to criticize the communist takeover of Hong Kong. He's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks and a Shark Tank cast member. He explicitly refused to defend Democrat protesters in Hong Kong facing oppression from the Chinese Communist Party after he was challenged to do so by Senator Ted Cruz. "Can you say free Hong Kong?" the Republican senator asked Cuban in a tweet. "Can you condemn the CCP, that's the Chinese Communist Party's concentration camps, with 1 million in them?" And there was no answer from Mark Cuban. So then Cruz said, "Let's try it simpler, Mark, tough guy. Can you say free Hong Kong? Can your players put that on their jerseys? Can you condemn the CCP's concentration camps? Can you say anything other than Chairman Mao is beautiful and wise?" This is super disappointing, Steve, because, these NBA players, these NBA owners, you know, they're getting wealthy because of the American idea. And the Chinese Communist Party does not believe in freedom at all. So here we've got these players that are trying to tear down America, but yet they won't say a word about communist China.
Well, what's the obvious conclusion? That there's got to be money in it?
Money, yep.
And I don't know how wealthy Mr. Cuban is, but, you know, how much is enough?
Well, I don't begrudge him making money. In fact,
no.
I'm happy with that. But what I'm really concerned about is the country that put in place the opportunity for him to become so extremely wealthy that he tears that one down and upholds a country that, many people are living in poverty. There's not freedom. And he won't say anything about that, but yet they tear down the United States of America, which is the country that gave them all these opportunities, Steve.
Yeah, that's a part of this that never seems to come into play. It's just, more and more. And, they look at they look at China and they see nothing but dollar signs and all the other things that are going on behind the scenes and the two, the clash of two major ideologies. It just doesn't seem to matter.
Right. And what might be a good thing for them to also take on is that Hong Kong lives matter. What do you think about that? So we're going to go to break, though, on that note. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my valued partners. They have 5 locations: Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And you can dine in. You can pick food up to go. They have delivery and they have curbside service. And they have happy hour. It's dine-in only. Patty and I went over the other day, had some great nachos as well as a nice beverage. And so they have specials Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. for happy hour. Wednesdays are Wings Day, all the wings that you can eat for $15.99. That's for dine-in only. They have lunch specials, beer of the month specials. So go to order.hooters.com for more information. Order.hooters.com. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking about the U.S. Constitution with Ben Martin, patriotic historian and former Army Ranger.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
that I'm a Trumpster Radio. Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas are doing an amazing job on that. As you know, they are working on getting this bus. It's taken us a little longer than anticipated. There were a couple of glitches here and there. We're helping them raise the money for the vinyl wrap. They have funded this whole thing 98% with their own money. They're very successful businessmen. They've been in the black entertainment business for many, many years. And they are Trump supporters. They're going to take this bus into ethnic neighborhoods and other kind of swing neighborhoods here in Colorado, help people get registered to vote, explain why they are supporting President Trump. And it looks like we're probably going to have the party with the bus the first part of August. It's been delayed just a little bit. So if you would like to help us out, go to I'm a Trumpster, that's imatrumpster.com, and contribute. And then just email me, kim@kimmunson.com, and let me know. For every $50 that you put towards I'm a Trumpster, you get one of their very cool battle masks. And so be sure and do that. Let's jump on over here. Ben Martin, good friend of mine. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger. He graduate from West Point. He has a great love for the American idea. So we're doing this show. It's sponsored by the Harris Family, about the important speeches and documents of America's founding. And today we're going to talk about the Constitution and three key figures in the making of our Constitution. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you doing, Kim?
I am good. So let's jump in here.
Oh, great.
Go ahead and give our listeners, go ahead and tell our listeners what we're doing here.
Okay. Kim and everybody out there, it's a great pleasure to be with you today and a great honor to be discussing our great U.S. Constitution, which is based upon the timeless and universal principles expressed in our Declaration of Independence and guides our daily lives here in America. Today, we are also going to discuss three of the most important framers, as you just talked about, who brought our Constitution into existence. They are James Madison, George Washington, and Benjamin Franklin. At the start of our discussion, we must emphasize the importance and relevance of this information and our American founding heritage. Plainly, it is more important than ever to learn our founding heritage because we can see today there is and has been for about a century a serious, deliberate, long-running, well-organized, and systematic effort to erase the knowledge of our heritage from our citizenry in order to start a new form of government, much like the Nazis did to the German citizenry in the 1930s. For those who study history, it teaches us the pattern is the same. It begins by a radical minority, such as was the progressives back in the 1920s in America. They first began distorting our heritage by manipulating what was taught by their purposely adulterated education system and then shaming the citizenry for believing in the goodness of our heritage. That had been distorted by this education. And finally, turning to violence, after much of the citizenry had been disarmed, and or were powerless and too ashamed to resist, as was the case with the Nazi efforts back in the 1930s. As we can see from our daily news programs, the patterns are similar and are aiming for a climatic conclusion. By the way, back in 1926, President Coolidge proved their title of progressive was a misnomer, a euphemism, and that their beliefs were not progressive, but regressive and reactive compared to the first principles and primary truths of our American founding heritage as expressed in the Declaration of Independence.
So you know, today, and Ben, Ben, to that point,
yes.
Throughout history, we have seen those that try to take power over others.
Right.
And that they call that progressive, but it really is regressive. It's what happens in human nature, you know, basically all the time if human nature is not kept in check. So that was what was so amazing and kind of radical, if you will, about the Declaration of Independence, that they said Every man is created equal with these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. That was a radical idea throughout the history of man. And I think it's important to understand that.
It is very important. And the other thing of that, which you were just talking about, with that these rights that we possess are inalienable, and they weren't granted to us by government, but as the progressives want it to be, that everything comes from government, but they came to us from our Creator, and they came to each individual. And then we, as the people, with these rights, gave certain powers to the government for the express purpose of protecting those inalienable rights and the general welfare of our nation and the citizenry. So it's really important. And when our founders, when our founders put those rights into being in the Declaration of Independence, it wasn't just for Americans. They wanted it to be for the whole world. And they wanted the whole world to grab hold of this concept that we had started in America. So we really need to remember that. And it's important today that we stand and confidently, don't shrink from it, but confidently defend our founding heritage as the resultant primary truths and first principles. And we can only do this if we know our founding heritage and those first principles. Once we know them, once they become an object of our mind, as founder and framer James Wilson said, they will most assuredly become an object of our hearts. Or, in other words, we will appreciate and love them. And as Abraham Lincoln said back in 1860, when speaking of our founders' struggle for independence, no people will fight and endure as our founding fathers did without something better, the promise of something better than a mere change of masters. We have to know and love our American heritage if we are to be patriots, able and willing to defend our heritage and our way of life. So let us now turn our focus to our three heroes and framers.
Okay.
So the first framer that we will talk about is James Madison, who is lovingly called the father of our Constitution. James Madison has been called the father of our Constitution because he did so much to bring that important founding document into existence as our principal governing document. He was instrumental in all phases of the Constitution, from the preparation for the Constitutional Convention, through the conduct of the convention, and afterwards in the ratification by the individual states. James Madison was born in Virginia in 1751 and lived there in his beautifully constructed mansion named Mount Pea for all of his life, with some notable exceptions, of course. He died at Mount Pea in 1836. He was the last living of our founding fathers at the age of 85. He was small in stature. As an adult, maybe 5'4" in height, and weighed approximately 100 pounds, sometimes less. But he had an enormously well-educated and prudent mind. His education came from private tutors at home and preparatory schools, and finally at the College of New Jersey, today called Princeton University, but maybe more so from his self-administered studies, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. On 15 September 1794, Madison married a 26-year-old widow, introduced to him by Aaron Burr. Her name was Dolly Payne Todd. Dolly, spelled D-O-L-L-E-Y, lost her husband to yellow fever. Madison and Dolly never had children, but Madison did adopt Dolly's one son, John Payne Todd. They enjoyed a strong relationship, and Dolly became his political partner. She was very popular in Washington, D.C., excelling in dinners and other important political events that she hosted. In so doing, she established the role of the First Lady of the United States. As a public servant, James Madison served in the Virginia Legislative Assembly, the Continental Congress, the Congress of the Confederacy, and the U.S. Congress. He also served in the cabinets of President Washington and Jefferson, and he was ultimately the fourth president of the United States.
Well, James and Dolly Madison, it is an amazing story. My understanding is she had a big personality as well. But Ben Martin, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management is on the line. Jason McBride, happy Tuesday.
Hey, happy Tuesday to you too, Kim.
I know you're a big fan of Ben Martin.
I like Ben. I could listen to him all day long.
How you doing, Jason?
Thank you. I'm good. Too bad this presidential brokerage guy has to come on and interrupt you.
No, and the reason that's presidential is, and I love the phone number, 303-694-1600, because of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, which is where the White House is. You guys thought of it all, Jason McBride.
Well, we did our best.
So what is happening in the markets?
Well, it's interesting. Kim, yesterday we had a fairly quiet day on the Dow and the S&P, but the NASDAQ flexed its muscles again and gained about 2.5%. This morning the futures look positive. We're right into the thick of earnings season, and we had a couple of biggies come out after the close or before the open today. IBM and Coca-Cola both reported earnings. Both of them saw a decline of 33% in earnings for the quarter compared to the same quarter last year. But both of them had better than expected earnings, so the stocks are up this morning, and that's pushing the futures up on the Dow. But, Kim, I think it's kind of interesting. If you look at Coca-Cola, in 2013, I mean, this was many years ago, their earnings were $2.08 a share. The earnings have steadily fallen, actually, every year until finally getting back to $2.08 in 2018. They eked out $2.11 in 2019. This year and next year, it's estimated to be well below that. So, you know, Coca-Cola is a well-known and very beloved company and a beloved stock for many. But when you really look at it, the company hasn't shown, you know, any earnings growth at all going back to 2013. And IBM is actually worse, Kim. I mean, their earnings have gone down steadily every year. At least back to 2013. They'll be down this year, down next year, and, again, that's maybe part of the reason that stock has just kind of languished for the last few years.
Yeah, definitely. I love all the research that you do on these earnings, Jason McBride, and I know you and your colleagues over there really sit down and you know, look at these things, and so I would highly recommend that people do a little portfolio checkup with you all.
Well, it's not a bad time to do it. The markets are not, dredging down at the depths of the bottom. It's not a time to be panicked right now. I always feel like people make better, more rational decisions when they're not in fear mode. So it may be a decent time to take a look. If when the market dropped, it gave you a pit in your stomach and made you feel like maybe you've got too much risk, now's a good time to reevaluate that. If it didn't bother you that much, maybe it's okay, but it never hurts to have a second set of eyes, take a look at what you're doing and give you a second opinion.
Well, that is for sure. And the way to reach Jason and all those fine folks at Presidential Wealth Management is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or our landing page together. We've got all kinds of podcasts and things. There is airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. Jason, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one, Kim. Thank you.
Thanks so much. We're going to go to break. We're talking with Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, graduate from West Point, about these important speeches and writings of the American founding. The show is brought to you by the Harris family. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
KLZ 560 app, available free for iPhone and Android.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter, and we'd appreciate it if you would go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. On the line with me is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian. West Point grad, former Army Ranger, and he really knows our history. And in fact, I took a couple of classes that Ben had offered, and it just brought these figures alive. So we were talking about James and Dolly Madison before we went to break, Ben Martin.
Yeah, we were, and about their great relationship and about her role, establishing the role of First Lady. And then we started talking about James Madison's political career. And he had a long record of public service, serving in many legislatures, to include the Virginia State Legislature, the Continental Congress, the Congress of the Confederacy, and the United States Congress. He also served in the cabinets of President Washington and Jefferson, and he was ultimately the fourth president of the United States, which we talked about before. Madison's contribution to the Constitution, which is what we're talking about today, started well before the start of the convention. In fact, more than two decades before. As a member of that most notable 5th Virginia Convention of June of 1766, which we talked about during the last two programs on this show, Madison worked with George Mason to write and pass the Virginia Declaration of Rights. As we discussed in those last two programs, that famous document and its 16 articles had a great influence on our most important founding documents. The first three articles of that declaration were incorporated by Jefferson as the self-evident truths and unalienable rights of the declaration. Articles 4 through 6 of that declaration were important to the Constitution, as they established the equality of all citizens and rejected the notion of privileged classes and hereditary offices. Public offices, of course. Articles 7 through 16 were important to the Bill of Rights, restricting the powers of government and establishing the rights of citizens, such as executing laws only with the consent of the people, establishing legal rights of the citizens in the justice system, such as trial by jury, speedy trials, the right of confronting the accusers and the witnesses, seeing the evidence, protection from cruel and unusual punishment and from unlawful searches and seizures, the freedom of religion and of the press, the establishment of a well-regulated militia, and many, many more. In his role of establishing the Constitution, Madison recognized early the many deficiencies in the Articles of Confederation and began preparing to bring about a new governing document for the United States. In 1784, a few years before the convention, Madison began to secure every treaties available on past and present governments. Remarking to Thomas Jefferson, his friend, then serving as U.S. ambassador to France and living in Paris, he said, "The operations of our government, our own government, must render all such lights of consequence," meaning we must use the lessons from history and the governments from history to structure our government so that it doesn't have these faults. He asked Jefferson, who was in Paris, as we said before, to serve as his procurement agent in Europe, giving him an unlimited commission to purchase all the relevant works. By 1786, Jefferson had sent him two big trunks of 38 books. Madison studied these books and documented his findings in a paper, an important paper he named Notes on Ancient and Modern Confederacies. Over the next 2 years, he would use the notes in these addresses in the Constitutional Convention, the Virginia Ratifying Convention, and most of all, in preparing his essays for the Federalist Papers. He also produced another paper in April of 1787, just before the start of the Constitutional Convention, which illustrated the specific deficiencies of the Articles of Confederation. And he called that the vices of the political system of the United States. And he used this to help him and the delegates focus their attention to specific areas to reform or to abolish. Finally, he produced a general plan of government, which would initiate and guide the first deliberations of government in the convention, and it was called the Virginia Plan. And he convinced Edmund Randolph, the sitting Virginia governor and delegate to the convention, to present the Virginia Plan as his own. As a result of all his preparatory work, it could honestly be said that no delegate came to the convention more prepared than Madison to address the complex problems of establishing an energetic national government based on Republican principles. Consequently, he took the lead on nearly all important questions of debate and most often came forward is the most informed man on any key issues of the debates. Besides leading these important debates, he was the only delegate who made comprehensive notes of all debates and proceedings in the convention, a truly valuable resource for our posterity.
I can't even imagine the amount of time that he spent to prepare for that, but just the amount of thought, it's amazing. Shall we, anything else about James Madison, or shall we move to George Washington?
Well, I want to say a little bit more because that's just the things that he did before the convention. So he worked before the convention, in the convention, and after the convention. And his remarkable contributions need to be understood by all of us and appreciated. So if we can continue on with him for a little bit longer.
Sure.
After the convention, it produced the proposed Constitution and transmitted it to Congress for submission to the states for their ratification by the conventions of the people of each state. Madison helped to ensure the subsequent ratification by co-authoring the Federalist Papers with Alexander Hamilton and John Jay. He also was a key member and strong influence in the Virginia ratifying convention of our Constitution. And finally, when he realized the Constitution would probably not be ratified without a Bill of Rights, Madison pledged to the people he would ensure a Bill of Rights was added as an amendment to the Constitution. Now, Kim, that was a pretty big pledge.
Mm-hmm.
In order
right.
to do this, he would have to be elected to the first U.S. Congress operating under this new Constitution. And that was no small feat, as his opponent for that House seat was none other than James Monroe, a Revolutionary War hero and an influential and well-known public servant in Virginia. Madison had to complete his work on the Federalist Papers, leave New York City, where he was collaborating with Hamilton and go back to Virginia to reestablish himself with the voters and campaign for the seat. Only with great effort was he able to accomplish this. Now he had to go back to New York and the United States Congress as a representative. He had to write a Bill of Rights, pass it through Congress, and help it be ratified by the states. Again, he accomplished all of this. And I ask, can anyone think of a more deserving person to be named the father of the Constitution?
It's astounding. Absolutely astounding.
So let's go further into George Washington, the father of our country and an essential founder.
Okay.
As the father of our country, he was famously eulogized in the United States Congress by Representative and Revolutionary War hero Light Horse Harry Lee as first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. His almost four decades of selfless and superlative service to our nation, he was one of only two essential founding fathers, along with Benjamin Franklin. Without the contributions of either of these founders, we would not be here today. After General Washington's successful leadership of the Continental Army in defeating the powerful and vaunted British Army and establishing American independence, and then returning his commission to Congress, not only was he called the greatest man in the world by none other than King George III, but he was also the most highly regarded person in all of America. His mere presence as a participant at the convention would ensure the other states would send their best representatives, which is what was needed to establish the world's first successful self-government. Before the convention began, he had coordinated with Benjamin Franklin to attend and work together. On the convention's first day, 25 May 1787, Washington was unanimously elected its president, the president of the convention. He immediately set the tone and established basic rules of behavior for the other delegates. His first address to the debates was short but very poignant, and it goes like this. If to please the people, we offer what we ourselves disapprove, how can we afterwards defend our work? Let us set a standard to which the wise and honest can repair. The event is in the hands of God. That's how the convention started, with him as president.
It's so interesting. Ben, I normally do a quote at the end of the show, and that's the quote that that I selected. Isn't that interesting?
Great minds, right, Kim?
I guess so. Hey, Ben, let's go to break. When we come back, we have one more segment. We're talking with Ben Martin. This is our show brought to you by the Harris Family on important documents and speeches of America's founding. We're talking about George Washington. We'll be right back.
Predovich and Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. On the line with me is my good friend Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, graduate from West Point, and an expert on America's founding. And we're talking about three key figures in the drafting of the U.S. Constitution. We talked about James Madison in the last segment, and we started with getting into George Washington. So, Ben Martin, continue.
Sure. Thank you, Kim. We will say we will wrap up Washington by talking a little bit about his summary. Washington, who had not delivered a single speech during the formal proceedings in the assembly room of the convention, nevertheless played a crucial role as president of the convention, guiding the deliberations and making important decisions about whom to recognize and whom to ignore in the give and take of debates. At the conclusion of the convention, Washington, in his missives sent along with the draft Constitution to Congress, stressed that the Constitution should be submitted to a convention of delegates chosen in each state by the people thereof for their assent and ratification. This was rather than submitting it to the state legislatures. He wanted it to be a product of the people, and he wanted the people to ratify it. And the second missive that he sent to them at the same time, it says this, and it's pretty important. He said, "It is at all times difficult to draw with precision the line between those rights which must be surrendered and those which may be reserved. In all of our deliberations on this subject, we kept steadily in our view that which appears to us the greatest interest of every true American, the consolidation of our union, in which is involved our prosperity, our felicity, our happiness, our safety, perhaps our national existence. Thus, the Constitution, which we now present to you, is a result of the spirit of amity and of mutual deference, which we consider indispensable." So wow. That's what he submitted. And then we will move on to Benjamin Franklin, considered the American sage and also an essential founding father. As the American sage, he was a polymath. He was a philosopher, an inventor, an entrepreneur, a writer, a humorist, a printer, a politician, an educator, a diplomat, in fact, the greatest diplomat in American history. And along with Washington, one of the two essential founding fathers. He was, as was George Washington, self-educated. He ran away from home in Boston and traveled down to Philadelphia to pursue his dream of becoming a successful businessman and a great person. Without his great diplomatic ability and the personal relationships he built with the French, we could not have won the Revolutionary War. He was a signer and contributor of both the Declaration and the Constitution. He was a member of the Committee of Five, which, along with Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, helped to draft the Declaration. At the Constitutional Convention, he represented the presence of prudence and compromise and was a strong ally of Washington. Late in the month of June, the delegates were locked in a heated and desperate debate on the question of representation in the legislature. That threatened to tear apart the convention before it would produce any semblance of a new and effective form of government. By 28 June, delegates were seriously threatening to leave Philadelphia and go back home to their respective states. Late in the day on 28 June, Dr. Franklin attempted to diffuse some of the hostility among the delegates, and rose to speak. He said, "The small progress we have made after 5 weeks is, methinks, a melancholy proof of the imperfection of human understanding. We have been running in search of political wisdom. We are groping, as it were, in the dark to find political truth, and scarce able to distinguish it when presented to us. How has it happened that we have not hitherto once thought thought of humbly applying to the Father of lights to illuminate our understanding. When confronting the crisis of the revolution against Great Britain, we had daily prayers in this same room for divine protection. Our prayers were heard, and they were graciously answered. Then he turned to Washington, saying, "I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid?" After reminding his fellow delegates of the power and utility of the deity, Franklin proposed a formal motion to commence daily prayers every morning before the business sessions began. As Franklin's motion was defeated, and though it was, tempers cooled, and several delegates echoed in their own words Madison's sentiments of a few months after the convention had adjourned. And he said, "It is impossible for the man of pious reflection not to perceive in the Constitution a finger of that almighty hand which has been so frequently and signally extended to our relief in the critical stages of the revolution." Again, on the final day of the convention, after the Constitution had been engrossed and laid out for signing, Franklin would present a speech to encourage the delegates to sign. And he goes like this: "Mr. President, I confess there are several parts of this Constitution which I do not at present approve. But, sir, I am not sure I shall never approve them. For having lived long, I have experienced many instances of being obliged by better information or fuller consideration to change opinions, even on important matters which I once thought right but found to be otherwise. It is therefore that the older I grow, the more apt I am to doubt my own judgments and to pay more respect to the judgments of others. In these sentiments, sir, I agree to this Constitution with all its faults, if they are such, because I think a general government necessary for us. I doubt, too, whether any other convention we can obtain may be able to make a better Constitution. For when you assemble a number of men to have the advantage of their joint wisdom, you inevitably assemble with those men all their prejudices, their passions, their errors of opinion, their local interest, and their selfish views. From such an assembly can a perfect production be expected. It therefore astonishes me, sir, to find this system approaching so near to perfection as it does. And I think it will astonish our enemies, who are waiting with confidence, to hear that our councils are confounded like those of the builders of Babel, and that our states are on the point of separation, only to meet hereafter for the purpose of cutting one another's throats. Thus I consent, sir, to this Constitution, because I expect no better, and because I am not sure that it is not the very best. On the whole, sir, I cannot help expressing a wish that every member of the convention who may still have objection to it would with me on this occasion doubt a little of his own infallibility, and to make manifest our unanimity, put his name to this instrument." And then they all signed the Constitution, except for three men. And later, outside the hall, Franklin was confronted by Elizabeth Powell, the wife of Philadelphia's mayor, Samuel Powell. "What kind of government have you delegates given us, sir?" she said. He replied, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." And in conclusion, in his renowned book entitled Plain Honest Men, The Making of the U.S. Constitution, Richard Beeman says this of these three framers whose contributions to making the American Constitution: James Madison, more than any other delegate, would provide the combination of intellectual firepower and dogged persistence that animated the convention. George Washington would contribute not nearly his prestige and gravitas, but just as importantly, his calm and deliberative leadership. Without Washington's presence, an event notable as a deliberation among thoughtful, public-spirited men could just as easily become notable as a scene of acrimony and disputation among self-interested men. While Franklin's interventions in the deliberations would sometimes be off the point, even a little bizarre, he would embody the spirit of compromise necessary if the 13 independent states were to come together an effective and durable union.
Ben Martin, we are out of time. Thank you so much. This was awesome. And we'll be going through another part of our founding next month. So, Ben Martin, thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you, Kim.
And our quote, we heard it from Ben earlier, it is too probable that no plan we propose will be adopted. Perhaps another dreadful conflict is to be sustained. If, to please the people, we offer what we ourselves disprove, how can we afterwards defend our work? Let us raise a standard to which the wise and the honest can repair. The event is in the hand of God. And that is George Washington regarding the Constitutional Convention. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Like a new moon rising.